You got Deuteronomy, Exodus chapter 16, entitled Teenage Education Meet the Lord, text number 11. Nadatatmani
gunam
Nadusam na kriyafalam
Nadusam na kriyafalam
Udasina vadasina
Udasina vadasina
Paravara drikishvara
Paravara drikishvara
Na
Excess.
Atma.
Atma.
The Supreme Lord.
The Supreme Lord.
He.
He.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Gunam.
Gunam.
Happiness.
Happiness.
Nam.
Nam.
Not.
Not.
Dosham.
Dosham.
Unhappiness.
Unhappiness.
Nam.
Nam.
Not. Nor. Kriyafalam,
Kriyafalam,
the result of any fruitive activity.
The result of any fruitive activity.
Udasinava,
Udasinava,
exactly like a neutral man.
Exactly like a neutral man.
Asinava,
Asinava,
sitting,
sitting,
in the core of the heart.
In the core of the heart.
Paraavaradrik,
Paraavaradrik,
seeing the cause and effect.
Seeing the cause and effect.
Ishvaraha.
Ishvaraha.
The Supreme Lord.
The Supreme Lord.
Translation. The Supreme Lord, Atma, the creator of cause and effect, does not accept the happiness and distress that results from fruit of actions. He is completely independent of having to accept a material body. And because he has no material body, he is always neutral. The living entities, being part and parcel of the Lord, possesses qualities in a minute quantity. Therefore, one should not be affected by lamentation. Purport. The conditioned soul has friends and enemies. He is affected by the good qualities and the faults of his position. The Supreme Lord, however, is always transcendental because he is the Ishvara, the Supreme Controller. He is not affected by duality. It may ever be said that he sits in the core of everyone's heart as the neutral witness of the causes and effect of one's activities, good and bad. We should also understand that udhasina, neutral, does not mean that he takes no action. Rather, it means that he's not personally affected. For example, a court judge is neutral when two opposing parties appear before him, but he still takes action as the case warrants. To become completely neutral, indifferent to material activities, we should simply seek shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Neutral Person. Maharaj Chittaketu was advised that remaining neutral in such trying circumstances as the death of one's son is impossible. Nevertheless, since the Lord knows how to adjust everything, the best course is to depend upon Him and do one's duty in devotional service to the Lord in all circumstances. One should be undisturbed by duality, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.47. Karmani eva vikaraste ma phalesu karachana makarma phalahitu bhurmante samyasta karmani. You have a right to perform your transcendent, your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. One should execute one's devotional duty, and for the result of one's actions, one should depend on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Maharaj Chitraketu was finding himself in extreme conditions of life. Somehow or other, due to great misfortune, his newborn son, his only son, somehow or other left this world. So it was a great cause of grief and what to do in such a situation. Even a devotee becomes affected by feelings of distress at such a time. Even although we know we're not this body, even although we know the living being, doesn't die, doesn't take birth, namriyate jayate nakadachin. The soul cannot be killed, nahanyate hanyamani sarire. We know all these things, but at such a time, one becomes overwhelmed by emotions. Maharaj Chittaketu at the time was not so rooted in transcendental knowledge. He had not really been active in spiritual life. So therefore, it was even more overwhelming for him. As a person who is not practicing spiritual life, at such a time, can really see nothing else, has no philosophical perspective to sort of relativize the emotions. The emotions may be there, but when one has knowledge, then at the same time the knowledge is also there, and one can sort of speak to himself and say, yes, but still, the soul is eternal. Still, my son has not really died. And that conviction, it helps. Of course, it's not really the solution, because one feels the burning separation from the son at such a time. So, Maharaj Chittaketu's predicament was certainly very difficult. Still, we are here looking at various verses which give us the philosophical perspective. Because in a way, there is a Chittaketu in us. You know, in a way, we're looking at ourselves. So this kind of engaged reading of the Bhagavatam is important. Not just we're hearing a story about something long, long ago it happened. No, we're hearing a story about life, and Chittaketu is a typical person who reacts like anybody else would react, like we would react. And therefore there is a little Chittaketu in us. And really, what we are hearing here is relevant to us. It is exactly that which will give us the transcendental vision, which will be the source of our strength at the time of a calamity, where we can see the bigger picture. Because ultimately, that is the point, to see the bigger, eternal picture. Do not just become so overwhelmed by the temporary causes and temporary effects that come about due to the material nature. Material nature is acting. It creates all these situations. Prakite kriyamane kunyakamani sarvasa ahankari mudatma kartam iti manyate. We are not the doer of activities. We are not creating our world. Although we may be planning and scheming and making arrangements and saving and planning a 1-year plan, 3-year plan, 5-year plan. In 5 years from now, we will be a little different than what you think now. That is the nature of material life. Rather than that, we are making our life. When you're, let's say, 20, then there is a burning question. And the question is, what am I going to make of my life? I have big choices to make. What choices shall I make? What will I make of my life? When you're 25 years later, when you're 45 or 50, then you know that you're not going to make anything of your life. Life is happening to you. It's just basically happening to you. It takes its own direction. And somehow or other, you try to get some grip on that and steer it. And it looks like Yes, yes, yes. I am steering my life in a direction. But in hindsight, you say, actually, I had no grip on it at all. It just took a course of its own. Yeah. That's the way it really will be. Here, the Supreme Lord is the creator of cause and effect. So therefore, whatever happens, we have to see that the Supreme Lord is behind everything, that the Lord is really the cause of everything, and that the Lord has a purpose. It's not just happening without any meaning. Rather, there is a meaning to this world. There are different worldviews, you know, that people have. Sometimes one worldview is, this world is a playground. It is basically a place for us to enjoy and have a good time. That's one approach to life. It's a particular outlook. Another worldview is, this world is like a classroom. We are meant to learn. It's meant to be a learning experience. So the second worldview is more in line with Krishna consciousness. That we don't think this material world was designed by the Supreme Lord for our enjoyment. It was a gift to us.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, gee. So wonderful, wonderful. No, you know, it's nice, but not that nice.
I have one deep trauma that they say if you speak about your traumas, you know, you get relieved. So I thought I would share this one with you, since you're many people, maybe it will bring me some relief. It happened quite some years ago that we were on a bus journey in Europe, and we were traveling from Central Europe to the north, you know, to Scandinavia. And the tour organized suitable videos for us for on the way, you know, polar bears and penguins. So we're getting ready, we're going to the north in Europe. North means cold, and you know. So it was sort of appropriate, and everything seemed to be all right. We were watching a movie about the emperor penguins. They're enormous, you know, 1.25 meters tall, right? And, you know, they lay their eggs sort of in fall. It's an awkward time. But in fall, they lay their eggs, and then, yes, both female and males take turns in sitting on the eggs. And then, you know, then as the polar winter sets in, then the women go to the south to an island, stay there, and island to the south, and it's the men that sit throughout the winter on those eggs in the polar night, at temperatures of -70 or -80. So they sit there the whole winter, yeah, on these eggs. And then at the end of the winter, when the first rays of sunlight begin to appear in the sky, because you know it's 6 months dark and 6 months light, right? Then when the sun appears, these male penguins, they also go south and join their ladies for the vacation on the island. And the eggs are left alone. Alone to warm up in the sun rays. And as the sun rays are just warming up the eggs, yes, you see cracks appearing in hundreds or maybe thousands of such eggs which are lying on the ice. And the little penguins come out and they step on the ice. And the ice was sort of sloping, and the penguins with their natural flat feet sort of have natural skis attached to their feet, and within moments they figured it out. And before you knew it, they were expertly skiing down the hill, you know, all of them, going down, you know, and just going straight for the edge, you know, and then just like over the edge and in a big dive about ready to plunge into the water. And then from the water came these enormous jaws of a killer whale who swallowed all my pain. That's my trauma. Oh my God, my penguins. Oh no, they were so happy. Really, they were so happy. At the peak of their happiness, this monster killer whale just swallowed them, the demon. Just see. So yes, this is the material world, I'm sorry. But ever since, you know, ever since that traumatic experience, I see a killer whale in every situation. wherever I look, just at the height of the fun, you know, I'm waiting for the jaws to appear and say, it's not gonna last. It's not gonna last. Mind my words. Everything in this material world, there's always the spoiling factor. The spoiling factor. It's, what can I do? A typical case of clinical depression. What to do about it? Or is it realism? Is it the nature of the material world? Everything in the world breaks down and it comes into being. It develops for some while, it grows, it flourishes, gives up some byproducts, begins to dwindle and ceases to exist. These are known as the six transformations, the sat-avikar of anything and everything in this world. So even if it's not dramatic by some jaws appearing from the water, then it's time. It's the slow grinding stone of time. There was that movie, Shangri-La. I don't know if you ever saw it, but in the movie there is this person who finds this valley, and it's like really a little paradise, and nobody ages in this valley, and he gets entrance in the valley and he just stays young and with everybody else. But after a while, you know, he begins to hanker for civilization, you know, just like we have the same when we are in India, in holy places like Mayapur. You start to think of supermarkets and, you know, milkshakes and things that they don't have there, and you want to go back to a place like Sydney after a while, although you're in that holy dome. So in this story, the same thing. The man started to feel some attachment to his previous life and wanted to go back, and then he goes out of Shangri-La, out of the valley, and then all the age grows on him. And the movie was shocking because he was like, I don't know how many years of age, but it all grew on him in a moment. And in the end, within 30 seconds, he was old. And you watched the whole thing on screen. It was a shocking way of seeing old age appear. It looks less shocking over time. But ultimately, it's the same. When the skin is flapping, the organs are bulging, and so on. I won't get graphic, don't worry. Maybe at the end, a little bit, just to spice it up. But before I do that, I'll stick a little bit to the verse. So cause and effect are there, and ultimately they have its origin in the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord does not accept the happiness and distress that result from fruit of actions. How is that? Because the Supreme Lord is not rooted in this identity. It's just, how serious are you going to take a movie or a dream? Last night I dreamt, it was hot and I was dreaming that I was somehow or other in a cage with lions. But then I said to myself, you're dreaming. And as soon as I said that, I didn't care anymore, you know. I said, don't worry, you're dreaming. You're only dreaming. Still, I climbed up the fence somehow or other. I did that, but I didn't take it so serious because I knew I was dreaming. So when you know you're dreaming, how serious are you going to take the material world? Right? It's a play. It's a play, and you just happen to have a part in this play. Oh, a real dramatic part of the scene. How wonderful to see you. Have we met before? Deja vu, deja vu. Okay. Yeah, the play has been, you know, played many times, many times. The script a little different, but very similar. Purapunas tervita charivinanum, chewing the chewed. During the truth, same thing. So how serious can we take it? The Supreme Lord is seeing this material world is a temporary domain. It's not really where the essence of existence is taking place. Those who are covered, those who are conditioned, they become very much emotionally affected. You can compare it to a child. You know, a child gets emotional about all kinds of trivial things. Right? So, and as an adult, you sort of go along with it. No, really? Oh, yeah, that's really serious. Yes. You play along because you know that it means a lot to the child. Because although the situation is actually not important, the feelings are real. And therefore you have to take the feelings serious. So it's the same with the conditioned soul. A transcendentalist is looking like, oh, you know, here someone is going through love, and here someone is going through depression, clinical, and here's someone getting excited, and here someone is bored. All these experiences are there and all meaningless. But you can't really say that. You know. Your love has no meaning. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. That would be too much. But if you go across the road into the park, right, and you just turn left around the stadium, you walk into this memorial where it says the greatest thing a man can do is to give his life for his country. And I go, yeah. sure, you know? Sure. And really, give us a break, you know? Send some kids into a war and then put a big stone with some inscriptions on it, you know, to make it, to sort of gloss it over. And we gotta believe all that, you know? Yeah. So it's a little difficult, you know, to take material life serious, for one who has transcendental vision. And that's only the beginning. Because it begins with vision. But then, as we get more and more purified, we begin to realize that vision. First, transcendental knowledge, then realized knowledge, that means in the heart, and then on the emotional level, we rise above. Then we also become neutral to the material world.
Yeah.
Yes, everything fell to pieces. Yes. Oh, yes. We just won $1 million. Yes. Like that, you know. It comes, it goes, up, down, whatever may be. So, it is said, let me just think. Sarva maha gunagan vaishnava sarire krishna gun sakire sanchare. And this one word. In the meter. Definitely miss a word. Anyway, whatever that word is, I owe it to you. But the verse in itself is saying that all the good qualities are present within the body of the Vaishnava. All the good qualities of Krishna are actually manifesting in a devotee. So that's interesting that we get the same qualities of Krishna. By serving Krishna, we get the good qualities of Krishna. By serving anyone, you get the qualities of that person. It's logical, because whatever is important to that person becomes important to you. So if you serve Krishna, whatever is important to Krishna becomes important to you. And the way Krishna conducts himself becomes important to us. In this way, we develop all the good qualities of Krishna. By the grace of Krishna. And in that way, we get the same neutrality that Krishna has, but the same interest. Not that spiritual realization means you're cold, like I sort of indicated before. Well, yes, totally neutral, you know. Seven family members just died. All right, I see. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Don't you care? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Is a devotee then a cold frog, cold like a stone? Doesn't he have any feelings? No, he does. The feelings are directed towards the eternal reality, the reality of Krishna, where Krishna performs his eternal pastimes. There, the devotee is alive. There, the devotee is going through all kinds of overwhelming emotions, much stronger than we know here. Not just, love is a very splendid thing for 3 days, and then it changes into routine. And the romantic moment is there, marriage, honeymoon, and then back down to reality. It's a hot afternoon, he sits there with his fat belly in front of the TV, you know, watching football, footy probably, and she's got gold pins in or something like that, and it doesn't look anymore like the Romans. I saw one movie. It was interesting. In the first part of the movie, the camera is on face height, and there's this man and woman, and they fall in love. The next stage, they get married, and she gets pregnant, and the camera goes to belly height, and it stays on belly height, and you see how the belly grows, and it becomes like everything begins to center around that. And then the child takes birth and the camera goes down to child height. And just that camera in these three positions tells a whole story in itself. How the focus shifts. And, you know, when it was at belly height, well, she wasn't as beautiful as before. So you see him sort of, okay, going through the whole thing. This is a mundane example. Then the child. So what was the original objective has transformed. It's all become child, child, child. That was not what he was thinking about when he first met the girl. I have a cartoon, and the cartoon, and many cartoons, but this particular cartoon, it shows a boy and girl meeting. It shows he's offering her a bunch of flowers, right? And then it shows two thought bubbles, and they overlap, right? And in his bubble, there is only one thought, sex. Right? And in her bubble, that's also there, but there's also children, family, home, grandchildren. It's all in the bubble. Right? Interesting. His thought was only sex. And then all these other things come. It's like, oh my God, I never thought of that. Help. So material conditioned life, not devotee. Devotee life should rise above this. It doesn't always, but like that. So gradually one becomes neutral to the material energy and one's focus shifts towards Krishna and his eternal activities, and one realizes this is actually the reality. At that stage, one becomes transcendental to the physical material world. And I'll end with that, with my story that I promised you. Once I was in the temple in Jaipur, in the Govindaji temple. And in that temple, I went there many times because I used to have a lot of work in Jaipur. And that Govindaji temple holds the old Govindaji deities of Rupa Goswami. So we'll always go to that temple, very nice. And there are these old people there. And there's this old pundit, he always gives the lecture, and it's always the same lecture. Sansara sagar mein janma mritya chal raha hai. He always starts like that. In the ocean of sansara, birth and death are always rotating. So he's like that, giving his lecture. And then behind him, there is an old man, and this old man, he is a little funny. He all the time makes strange gestures. You know, just during the lecture, he does something like... or... So all the time. So, you know, the first time I saw him, I thought, like, well, every temple has one, you know? But then the next thing was that I began to notice that he was doing it when the speaker was making an important point. So really he was doing it for the sleepers, you know. Wake up. Here is an important point being made. All right, it was going on like this. Then towards the end of the lecture, the doors of the altar were still closed. Two men would come, one would carry an enormous key, because a huge padlock on the deity door, a key like this, carrying it on both his hands. Another man, with his nose up, was walking next to him. Then when they came to the door, the man with the nose took the key from the other man and opened the lock. And it clearly was some sort of hierarchical relationship here. And then the doors opened and the pujaris, they started the arati, and it was a big thing. And then at the end, they come out with the water. And they have a big pot, not just a little, but a big pot too. One carries the pot, the other one is walking next to him. And they throw water. I mean, not three drops, you know, I mean, bring an umbrella or whatever. I tell you, soaked. So you get totally soaked, right? And then what happens next? The local people, right? They just open their mouths to catch the water. That was nice. And then in the back, there are these old men, you know, and they are leading a kirtan. They are the kirtan leaders. And it goes something like that. Govinda, 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 Govinda. I almost fall backwards. The cough is also part of it. it's just very nice to see these old people so fired up, so eager. There was an old lady, she pulled my kurta. I go, sannyasi. I'm about this, sannyasi. And she pulled again. And they go, you know, not in the temple, asking for some money. I thought, in the temple, you can't do that. Then she pulls out these little binoculars out of her pocket, out of her cloth, and she gives it to me. I look. So I look, and I looked at Govindaji, you know, and close up darshan, really nice. And then I saw that Govindaji had a watch. You have to have a watch in India. If you don't have a watch, you are nobody. So Govindji also had. Very nice. Nice to see all this worship. And then suddenly, all the people start running and run out of the temple. And then you go to the Gopinath Mandir. If you're quick, you run behind them, you make it to Gopinath Mandir. And there are the old ladies, they're leading the kirtan, and they are old. They're so old that their chins and noses have almost grown together. But they are dancing like young gopis. And it is not difficult to understand that only a little bit of time is separating them from actually dancing eternally in the young bodies of gopis. So these beautiful old people, not defeated by time, not defeated by life, not defeated by the fact that due to old age they have lost everything. No, not defeated at all, because they are fully absorbed in the eternal spiritual world. And that makes them into beautiful old people. And I know for a fact that this movement will also produce many beautiful old people. And that is something amazing, something that to look forward to. So we're not worried about getting old. We tolerate a few discomforts, but we know that actually it brings us closer and closer to Krishna and to the spiritual world. So, we never lose, we only gain over time, because every moment is spent in devotional service. With that, I'll end. Any questions, any comments? Give you some time to think.
Maharaj, you mentioned that the devotee has a full range of spiritual emotion because of their connection and aspiration towards the spiritual world, therefore they are not callous. But in a material sense, the devotee may have the position of wanting to console someone go through these material realities. So what approach does the devotee take in that particular situation?
Well, I gave the... When we are finding that the devotee has the full range of emotions in the spiritual plane, and therefore not callous to the... but yet, one might want to console a person in this material world. Yes, we do so, and that is fine, up to an extent. We need to. We will console people if in the end the result is that they'll come closer to Krishna. So if they are, after that support from our side, willing to take up a little bit of devotional service, oh yes, We will console, we will support, we will hear, we will give them time. And, but we limit it to that. You know, we're not going to invest all kinds of energy to comfort people if they're not willing to take up devotional service. No. Then we stay neutral. Furthermore, we have to see what our own capacity is to absorb all that negative energy. People going through all kinds of negative emotions can be draining to deal with. So one must make sure that one doesn't become, that one doesn't pour so much energy into supporting others that one actually becomes disturbed in one's own spiritual practice. Because we are maybe not so transcendentally powerful as yet, we are still, although we have transcendental knowledge, we also still have some material conditioning. So we must find balance there, that we don't overdo it. You have to look after yourself so that you stay spiritually strong. So not this kind of, complex where I'll sacrifice myself for the good of everyone else. We're not ready for that. We're not ready for that. So save yourself, look after yourself, then take on the burdens of others who are interested in Krishna consciousness and can do some service. And we do something for the general populace trying to put transcendental knowledge out there. We are engaged in welfare work, but don't forget to look after yourself. Other question?
Yes. The action of one family member will bring happiness to that member.
The action of one family member can bring happiness to that family member.
But it may bring sorrow to another member of the family. How do we resolve this situation?
But it may bring sorrow to another family of the member. How to resolve this situation? Yes. Bhagavatam is giving us a verse. Viteri tam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatni tadvityat atmano mayam yato tamayato basa. It is said that one must measure the value of something by its relationship with Krishna. So you look at that situation and see what is the interest of Krishna in this situation. So it's not just between two family members. There's always the third party. The third party is Krishna. So now, is this behavior for my family member, is it good for Krishna or is it bad for Krishna? If it's bad for Krishna, we take action against it. Stop this. You're disturbing everyone. This is nonsense. But if it is favorable for Krishna, all right, then we tolerate the discomfort caused by his activity. Say, you have one family member, he gets up at 3 in the morning while everyone is asleep and he starts ringing bells in his puja. That is good. Even although you can't sleep and think, why is he have to ring these bells now? This is too much. You know, I have to work today and he's ringing bells. Stop this ringing. No, these bells bless the whole house because he's worshipping Krishna. So tolerate. But if he has a party up there with his friends and there's bottles with undrinkable things, yes, then you can march on the room and say, not in my house, out. Like this. So Krishna is the yardstick by which we measure good and bad. And that's the nice thing, you know, like when you have a verse like that from Bhagavatam, suddenly everything is clear. You measure the value of anything by its relationship with Krishna. Suddenly everything is simple. You know, what shall we do, what to do, what not to do, I'm not sure, I'm in doubt. All doubt cleared. Measure it by what's beneficial for Krishna. You say, yes, but sometimes if you go left, it's beneficial for Krishna, and if you go right, it's also beneficial for Krishna. Then what should you do? Then it doesn't matter. Go left or go right. As long as it's beneficial for Krishna. Anyone? Yes.
Maharaj, you talk about the focus, the life, the focus in life takes turns. Like, for example, for me, like, with a kid, the service that I was doing before, I don't have the time, and, you know, the thing. So, during this space of life, how do you keep up the motivation?
Motivation is always there, right? And it's the same battle at any stage in life. But yes, we go through stages. I have some cartoons. This cartoon shows first picture, a child, you know, a baby just born, and the caption says, too young. Next picture shows a couple in love, hand in hand, full moon behind them, too much in love. Next picture shows a family, a few kids, you know, bags with groceries, he's got a phone, a computer, a drill, and a screwdriver. I mean, they have six arms, you know, they're too busy. Next picture, old man, deaf, too old. Yes. Last picture, cross on the grave, too late. So, at every stage of life, we have an excuse. We always have an excuse. Yeah. So now you can say, I always thought chanting Hare Krishna was very difficult, and now I have the perfect excuse, children. So happy that I have children because I don't have to chant Hare Krishna anymore. It's a relief, right? Because now I have very good arguments not to chant. No, chanting must be done under any condition of life. And no material difficulty can ever be accepted as a valid excuse for not chanting. You come and why didn't you chant your rounds today? I broke my leg. That's not a valid excuse. You could have chanted in the hospital. So, yes, I was unconscious. Well, then you should have started chanting when you regained consciousness. Yeah. So, we don't accept any excuse when it comes to chanting. Sorry. That's the first point. And that's how we have to deal with ourselves. See, you have to take charge of yourself as with intelligence, as if you are another person, looking at yourself. Here you are. In your intelligence, it's as if it is another person looking at yourself. And then you see yourself coming with excuses. I'm too busy. Sorry, that's not an excuse. Make time. You manage to make time when you really want it. For your favorite TV program. Chin. So yes, so indeed. So we must, with our intelligence, take charge and make arrangements, make time to chant. And chant with a plan. Don't just let chanting happen. I have to chant 16 rounds. I'm really trying, but I'm so busy. You can't believe how busy I am. I just can't do it. I just don't have the time. I try every day. Don't have the time. Bad time management. You have a time management problem. Yes, you are chanting without a plan. How do you think you'll get it done without a plan? You have to have a plan. Okay? You have to build it in the day. So I'll chant here, I'll chant there, and I need so much time for 16 rounds, so many rounds here, so many rounds there. Yeah. That's how it's done. Otherwise, you know, I also have a plan to chant today because I just arrived in Australia and I'm sort of still dizzy and disoriented and looking at, like, oh, where am I? And seems to be Sydney. And then it's three programs today. So I have to chant some rounds on the drive to make sure I don't fall asleep and that the driver is not going to try and reveal his heart to me while driving. So I have a plan. I want to drive it in the car. So chant, if you make a plan for spiritual love, and it will go. Okay, thank you all very much. Shiva Prabhupada ki jai.